I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Texans training camp is happening now. Sports Radio 610 presents Seth Payne and Sean Pendergast.
Hey, what's happening, everybody? Happy Thursday to all of you. Nice to be with you. It is great to be with you on a Thursday. We are with you till 10 o'clock today. Sean Pendergast, Seth Payne. Seth, the Astros bailed out our 48 hours of sheer bliss sports two-day period, teetering on the brink of 0-4. The Astros did something they haven't done as much this year as they have in years past. Made us feel really good coming in this morning. That was fun last night.
Made us feel really good with so much, so many fun things happened last night. We had Greinke just flat out giving away, not just, you know, Greinke's been calling out and signaling to the catcher at times this year when there's a runner on second, but last night he was getting frustrated, so he just started explaining exactly which sign he was giving to the catcher, to Maldonado.
At the top of his lungs in an empty stadium.
It looked like, no, that was the funny thing, it looked like... You know, like when somebody kind of loud whispers and they think they're saying something quietly, but everybody can hear it.
Or like when they have their AirPods in and they think they're talking at a normal level, but they're really yelling.
Yeah,
you know?
It felt like that.
I think music's playing.
I think he thought it was quieter than it was.
Yeah.
Not that it would have mattered. I mean, I guess because he's given the sign to Maldonado, he's got to try to keep. He's got to keep the guy on second from seeing what the sign is. So it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if the runner on second can hear what he's saying.
Right.
And the runner can't, you know, because he can't see the signs. The batter can't, whatever.
Yeah.
The batter can't see the, it was really entertaining. It was something that you'd never be able to pick up on that in a non-COVID environment.
That's
so
right.
So thank you, COVID virus, for that.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
So the Astros, they get a win. They win a series. It's been a while since they've done that. They're 8-10, and they get a day off. And they better enjoy it because they are playing baseball for the next 17 days, starting tomorrow.
Dusty Baker, in classic Dusty Baker fashion, flummoxed his way into a good managerial decision. So this Fraley that the Astros signed, the reliever Fraley that they signed
Raley.
In a few days. Raley.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
You're thinking of Ace Fraley from
Kiss.
No, I'm not.
This is what happened. I'm thinking of Hank Fraley, the old center from the Eagles who had like one of the worst bodies in the history of the NFL. Because the whole time Raley was up there, I kept thinking, like, how can I make a joke about Hank Fraley that – even if only 0.1% of my Twitter followers understand, they'll
good.
Love it. And I spent 10 minutes trying to figure out how I could link Hank Fraley, Deuce Staley, anything that reminds with Raley. So anyway, so Raley comes in, gets two outs in the seventh, and goes to the dugout, and Dusty Baker, you know, gives him the fist bump. And apparently Raley thought that meant like, hey, good job, go on out there and get him again. Dusty Baker thought that was a universal sign for, all right, you're done. So Josh James was going to come out for the eighth. The problem is Raley thought he was going out, so he crossed the white line from the dugout, which means he's got to go out and face at least one batter. And he ends up going out and pitches the whole inning and does a great job of
it.
So, and thank God, because the
spirit of the rule, right. And so I couldn't believe how many guys, well, it must be the three-batter rule. I'm like, they didn't just change the three-batter rule before this game.
Like, you think, you know what the rule's been, right? For all year. I couldn't believe. I was shocked.
I don't know. But it's one of those things where with a new rule, you don't know all the little ins and outs, and you're wondering maybe, I don't know. I'm with you. I figured I was being the dumb one. Yeah. And, yeah, lo and behold, it turns out we were all being dumb.
That's right. That's right.
Including perhaps the guy that just thought, look. Use your words, man.
Yeah.
These little things like this are kind of a big deal.
Seth, we're 18 games into Dusty Baker. It feels like 4 months.
Man, Rally spent the last 5 years in Korea. Maybe in Korea. In Korea, the fist bump is...
The fist bump means, get back out there, buddy!
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, Dusty said I gave him the knuckles. I assume he meant, like, the fist bump.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Is that giving the knuckles?
Yeah, the knuckles.
Is that a standard phrase that I don't know now?
I don't know. I mean, look, Dusty's 71, so who knows what his phrases are compared to young whippersnappers like you and me. So,
give somebody the knuckles to me sounds more sexual than anything. I'll give the fist
sexual
bump.
Sexual or violent? Like, yeah, I gave the guy the knuckles. Knuckle sandwich, that kind
of thing.
Oh, no,
I'm talking about that.
I know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Yeah, the shuffle. I gotcha. Dusty Baker said this was a pretty good win last night.
That was a good one to win. It feels good to win a series, like especially like right before an off day. So, now we can have a pleasant off day, and then when we come back back to work for a long time. The fact that we didn't have to use, Michael Brantley, we didn't have to use Jose, and I was praying that we didn't have to, have to use those guys, and their replacements did great.
Yeah, I think a couple things there, Seth. One, yes, Jose Altuve, Michael Brantley sit out that game. So they really get a kind of a two-day vacation here because they sit out. They don't have to be used. They just got to chill last night on the bench, probably for Altuve as much as anybody. It was good to just clear his head a little bit. He gets to do that for another day. It looks like Yordan may be coming back pretty soon. So that's that's a big deal. And it was interesting what Dusty said right there about going into an off day. Kind of feeling good about yourself because you won a game. You hear that a lot in the NFL when there's a bye week. And in this season for baseball, a day off is basically the equivalent of a bye week because there are hardly any days off in this schedule. So I think just from a mental, this sounds a little participation ribbonish of me to say, but going into this off day at 8-10 is a lot different than going into this off day at 7-11.
That's a big deal. It's in a short season. I don't know. Again, I hate doing this whole thing where you multiply each game by three, but yeah, if you're three games below 500, it almost feels like you're nine games below 500. The flip side is that you can gain back those 10 games, nine games way easier than in the past. I think we need to keep that in mind. As tempting as it is to say, like, well, each one of these games is worth 2.7 games, so it's like it's really like you just lost 12 games in a row. Remember, it's a lot easier to win those quote-unquote 12 games in a row again this year, too.
Yeah, well, I think the main thing is, you're right, like everybody's multiplying everything times 2.7, and by the way, feeling like they discovered plutonium in the process. Like, remember, 2.7, I'm like, way to do long division, buddy, nice job. We're just going to reach a point here soon, Seth, where it doesn't matter how many games are being played in the season. It's going to be how many games are left in the season. You know what I'm saying? Like, within a week from now, it's not going to matter that the Astros are, 11-13. It's going to matter that there's 32 games left and they're five games back of the A's. You know, if you're looking for them to win the division, that's what's going to matter. Like, okay, it's not how many games they've played or how few games they've played. It's how much runway is left and what do you got to accomplish?
You're 4.5 games back from the A's. I guess the unfortunate thing this year is that you've got fewer games against the teams. You know, you think about in a conventional year, okay, once you get halfway through the season, you might say, okay, well, we're five games back from the A's. Well, let's say you're three-quarters of the way through the season.
Yeah.
You might say, well, we're five games back from the A's, but we've got, a four-game series coming up with them.
Yeah.
And you can gain back a whole lot of ground really quickly when you beat that team that you're behind.
Yeah.
You're not going to get as much of that this year.
Not the case this year, yep. So
but when you do face some of these teams, you're going to have Yordan. You might have Verlander, who's going to try to start throwing soon. I don't know how I feel about that, other than that, look,
I don't know,
you Chandler lived a long
Rome,
life.
How does Chandler Rome feel about it?
Yeah, Chandler Rome had just reported that he was out for the year.
Twice.
Initially. Twice, that's right, he buckled down on it.
Doubled down, yeah.
I wonder if Verlander, Verlander's he's got that kind of Tom Brady ability to put a chip on his shoulder. I wonder if there's part of Verlander that's just like, I don't know, look, I don't even think I should come back, but screw that. I'm going to prove this guy wrong.
Right, he's just doing it despite Chandler Rome.
Go out and pitch one against face one batter.
Yep.
And then shut it down.
All right, Texans training camp is going on right now. I head back out for my second COVID test today, in case you were wondering. And I get to wear a Kinexon vest at practice. We'll get to more of that later. We'll get to some Texans a little later on.
Sounds like some kind of a sanitary napkin or something.
Kinexon vest?
Yeah, there's that. The Kinexon.
I can tell you, as much as us media members sweat, that thing will not be sanitary at all by the time we hand it back in at the end of practice. We'll get to some Texans a little later on this hour. The Rockets, the playoffs are set now for the Rockets, and it's the most intriguing matchup to me in the entire league once the playoffs get here. That's next. Rockets lose to the Pacers yesterday. That was not really the big news. The Rockets are all set. They're going to be playing the Oklahoma City Thunder in the first round of the playoffs. So the game really meant nothing. I think the Rockets want to be on that 4-5 line. Doesn't matter if they're the 4 or the 5. The game's being played in a neutral bubble. Unless you're intimidated by digital images of fans screaming from their home, then it really doesn't matter where you are lined up in the playoff bracket. If there's no home court advantage per se. The bigger news now for the Rockets is what's wrong with Russell Westbrook. They shut him down yesterday. Yesterday was couched as rest because it was a back-to-back. So he, even fully healthy, Russ would not have played yesterday, but he did get an MRI on his quad, and he's not going to play on Friday. And Mike D'Antoni sounds a little, it's a little up in the air right now with Russ, basically.
We'll reevaluate in a couple of days. He's not going to play Friday. Make sure we'll see how he responds and everything, but we all hope that we'll just see next week. I don't know right now.
All right, so Seth, if they're putting together a smokescreen just to load manage the hell out of him without catching any heat from the league, which I don't think they would. Like, the seeding is pretty much nailed down in the East and the West. These last couple games of seeding games in the bubble are going to be a whole lot of subs playing and things like that for teams as they get ready for the playoffs to start next week. So if the Rockets are trying to smokescreen in any way, they sure are taking it to the nth degree by giving Russ an MRI on his quad.
Yeah, I'm not buying this smokescreen stuff. Yeah. Does Morey? I guess Morey would. It wouldn't be. It wouldn't totally surprise me. I can't remember a time where Morey has pulled a move quite like this, though.
Yeah.
D'Antoni doesn't seem like he's into any kind of chicanery like that.
Yeah.
I feel like this is wishful thinking to the extreme. If you think that this is some elaborate hoax by the Rockets to somehow, I don't know, what would they be even doing? Duping the Thunder into thinking they don't have to go as hard?
I'm being somewhat tongue-in-cheek, you know what I'm saying?
No, because I saw that in various places. Sometimes I see these things thrown out by people I actually respect, and that's when I worry that maybe psychologically they're getting a little too tense about things.
Well, let's bottom line this thing. How worried are you about Russell Westbrook and this quad injury?
I would say I am at a
1 to 10, 10 being the most worried.
I'm a 5, I suppose.
Okay, so you're right in the middle, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I am too, just because it's, he's an older player. He relies on explosiveness. So if it's a quad, that to me is not something that just magically goes from being, ow, this hurts, to all of a sudden you're well again. You know, Russ is a guy who has to be able to explode and get to the rim and beat guys off the dribble and get up and down the court. And the numbers yesterday, boy. And it's just one game, but I do think it's a stark example of something that was true when Chris Paul was here, and it's true with Russell Westbrook here, Seth, that one of the advantages you have with two superstars like that on a team, CP3 and James, and now Russ and James, is that you have one of them on the court at all times.
Yeah.
CP3
yeah.
running with the twos, Russ running with the twos, and the numbers from the game yesterday against Indiana, James Harden on the court. They had a 111.4 offensive rating, a 97.5 defensive rating, so basically a margin of plus 13.9. That's really, really good. With James off the court, their offensive rating was 51.6. That's like a CYO league team getting out on the floor. They had a negative 51.7 differential. Like, I know these are a lot of numbers I'm throwing at you in your cars early in the morning here with decimal places and things like that. Let me just tell you, the difference between the Rockets with Harden on the court and with Harden off the court yesterday was the difference between an actual NBA team and a team of 5 cardboard cutouts. It was that bad.
It's And it's been tricky to kind of figure out the Rockets statistically this year because obviously they were a completely different team once they went super small ball and Capella was gone, and that opened up everything for Russ. But then even when you look at the bench numbers, at times I think the bench numbers have been worse than they actually are just because Russell Westbrook is, when he's out there with the bench, he's still counted as a starter, so the stats get all screwed up. Those guys are exactly what they are, aren't they? They're really good role players that work well in conjunction with somebody else on the court that creates for them.
Yeah, none of them are facilitators.
Yeah, right, which is they're perfect, which is that's exactly what you want. I mean, Morey's done a great job of bringing in these guys who complement James Harden and Russell Westbrook. Those two are the straw that mixes the drink, and then those guys are swirling around in the drink and getting open threes and doing what they do. And it's not rocket science. It falls apart when you don't have one of those studs out there. So yeah. That's where I'd be highly, highly, highly surprised if Russell Westbrook doesn't play in the playoffs because of this quad. But is he at full 100% Russell Westbrook? And, you know, can you get consistent effort out of him out of the entire series? That's what I'd worry about.
Can you steal a game without Russell Westbrook, I think, becomes a question. You know what I mean? They're going to play Oklahoma City. This is a series that's going to be really intense. Because of it's already intense between those two teams, even before you had swapped star point guards. But you know, Chris Paul is going to want to shove it right up the Rockets. Like Chris Paul,
it's the yin yang.
Look, this is an Oklahoma City team that shouldn't even be here. You know what I mean? Like when they traded Russell Westbrook, everybody assumed that Chris Paul was going to go there. They were going to have to then turn around and trade Chris Paul because why would he want to be there with all these young players? And instead, I give Chris Paul a lot of credit. He said, you know what, I'm getting paid a lot of money. I'm going to do what I do, which is try to be a leader for this team and try to go win basketball games. And he, when it's all said and done, they may be seated higher than the Rockets in the Western Conference. They may be the four, and the Rockets might be the five. So I give Chris Paul and Oklahoma City a lot of credit. Nobody expected them to be in a 4-5 matchup in the Western Conference playoffs to start things out. This is not going to be... This is a tough putt for the Rockets in the first round.
The two things that I would say if I were going to try to walk you off the ledge there is that, okay, you know, Eric Gordon is just coming back and was feeling his way out, and that Austin Rivers can do a whole lot of those things that you want a point guard to do when one of those guys is out. So, and you know, he didn't get it. He was 1-for-9 yesterday and 1-for-5 on three-pointers. But we've seen just, you know, recently, 3 games ago, just how good Austin Rivers can be in that role. And I think he'll step up if he needs to in that first round. But, yeah, this Oklahoma City, there's so much intrigue to this Oklahoma City series. Just even aside from all the Chris Paul, Russell Westbrook irony, it's just there's a lot to be uncomfortable
about.
Yeah,
the Western Conference playoffs are setting up huge, man. I think the Rockets and the Thunder are the most intriguing series of the whole playoffs, but the Clippers and the Mavericks, to me, is an intrigue. I don't know if it's going to go 6 or 7, but watching Luka and Kristaps Porzingis going against the team that's been, you know, the new super team that's been constructed is really intriguing. If Portland is able to somehow sneak in as the 8 seed, I think they give the Lakers a lot of problems because of the matchups and the way Lillard's playing right now. Even Denver and Utah is going to be fun. So the Eastern Conference is blah, but the Western Conference sets up really, really nice. All right, let's get to some Texans talk. Hey, quick mention here. I heard the promo guys say it during the last break, but Bill O'Brien and J.J. Watt are going to be on our station over the next 2 days. First day of Texans practice is tomorrow. Big day, and the big names are coming on here. Coach O'Brien at 8 a.m. with Mark Vandermeer and John Harris during Texans training camp live, and then J.J. Watt is going to be on with Clint Sterner and the show during their show tomorrow afternoon. So we've got Texans training camp going on right now. No one is covering it as in-depth as we are. I'm going to be out there giving reports. I'm one of 10 media members covering practice, so it's really, really cool for me, and I'm going to be bringing everything back to you that I possibly can from Texans training camp. So big next couple days here on Sports Radio 610. Speaking of the Texans, one Texan for whom 2020 is the most pivotal year in his career. That's next. All right, we have a bit of Houston Texans breaking news for you. And I got to say, I got to pat myself on the back a little bit here with this Texans breaking news. Seth, we have Texans breaking news.
Oh, my gosh.
And this is breaking news that you and I talked about as a possibility last week.
Okay, wait, let me guess what this is involving. Who does it involve?
Well, that'll give it away, but it involves P.J. Hall.
Oh, okay.
P.J. Hall, the former defensive tackle at Sam Houston State University, a former second-round pick of the Raiders, who the Raiders let go last week. They didn't let him go. They were going to let him go, and then they did one of those trades of a guy you're about to let go of for next to nothing. They traded him to Minnesota for a seventh-round pick. He failed his physical there, so they wound up cutting him. Well, P.J. Hall is now the newest member of the Houston Texans, something, Seth, that you and I had brought up as a possibility because physically, you know, at least in terms of stature, he's 6'1", he's a little over 300, so he fits kind of that Brandon Dunn, Angelo Blackson mold physically. He's obviously got a lot of talent as a former second-round pick, and he's got a Twitter handle. His Twitter handle is at PJJ Watt. That's his Twitter handle, so he fits in perfectly. He clearly worships at the altar of one Justin James Watt.
And I would say, and you know what, honestly, I'll be honest, I haven't watched him in the NFL. I just remember from watching him at the Battle of the Piney Woods for several years and kind of even preparing when I would broadcast that game a couple times too.
Yeah.
I think he's probably a more explosive guy than Angelo Blackson and Brandon Dunn. I think ultimately they would have hoped for him to be a more dynamic player than those guys who are more conventional, just 3-4 style run stuffers. So there's intriguing upside with him. He did some good things with the Raiders, and I'm not entirely clear exactly why there was a loss of hope in him in Oakland, other than maybe it was injury related. So I think that's an intriguing player right there. And also, we had talked about this too. You know, he's only 6'1". Anthony Weaver played with Kelly Gregg in Baltimore. Kelly Gregg was a nose tackle for the Baltimore Ravens, who did not fit like the prototypical size of a, you know, usually 3-4 defensive linemen, you want to be at least 6'4" so they can play with their hands and control offensive linemen and play gap control and everything. Kelly Gregg was a badass, was like 6 foot tall.
Yeah.
So I wonder if Anthony Weaver looks at him and sees some of that. Sometimes guys, coaches in certain schemes fall in love a little too much with the measurables, and they think that a guy can't make it just because he's 6'1". And they forget that some of the best defensive tackles in NFL history have been 6'1".
Yeah, I think there's a little bit of something going on the defensive line with the Texans since Anthony Weaver got here in 2016, and he's still coaching the defensive line. Even though he's coordinating this defense, he is still listed as the defensive line coach. And even if he weren't, he would obviously be getting his hands in the clay with some of these guys, teaching them and developing them. That's been one of the better position groups, if not the best position group on the team, in terms of developing guys relative to their draft status, or in some cases, lack of draft status at all, undrafted guys, or street free agents that Anthony Weaver has turned into productive players. DJ Reader was a fifth-round pick the year that Weaver got here. He just got the biggest contract in the league for a nose tackle. Brandon Dunn was a street free agent. They just signed him to a nice size deal. He's been a productive player for them. Angelo Blackson, same thing. He's cut. He's a mid-round pick by the Titans. He gets cut. He comes here. He's been a nice piece in that defensive line. Charles Omeniu had a nice rookie year. My point, it's a little like Brent Strom. I'm not saying the Texans defensive line group is the Astros pitching staff, but Weaver is a guy as a position coach where you feel like, man, if you get somebody, especially somebody who has second-round talent like P.J. Hall, who's underachieved a little bit, and you put him through the Anthony Weaver car wash, maybe he comes out the other side realizing some of that potential that he had. And I think, Seth, these are the types of signings that the Texans are going to need to make and hit on in years going forward, with the cap going down, with Deshaun Watson about to get a huge pay raise, with Laremy Tunsil's pay about to go up. If J.J. Watt has a big year, he probably gets a new contract. You've got to go find guys. It's a little like what they've done in the secondary. You know, Gerrion Conley, I think, was a similar type of thing where former first-round pick, we get him for a third-round pick. If he turns into what we think he can be, then, you know, they're going and getting some guys who have some sort of pedigree who maybe underachieve. Conley, a former Raider, too, ironically. But I like this. I mean, you know, it's a signing for nothing, presumably. I don't think they're giving him big money or anything to come in. The guy just failed a physical in Minnesota. Yeah.
That's where it's even better than, you know, I think it's, look, he's not, he didn't, He was a second-round pick out of Sam Houston. I think he was the highest player drafted out of Sam Houston in quite some time.
Mm-hmm.
He's way – like when you brought up Brandon Dunn, that's where I had to object because I want to say he ran like a 4.8 40.
The only reason I brought up Dunn is as an example of Weaver developing guys. That's
right,
the only
right,
I'm
right,
not saying
yeah.
he's similar to Brandon Dunn. I'm saying Weaver takes guys that are – that you know, Brandon Dunn was nothing. You know, he was undrafted. He's on the street. And Weaver turned him into a guy who just got $3 or $4 million a year. I'm not saying they're similar players.
Yeah, yeah. And but that's where – this guy would have more upside than that, too, just because, I mean, he was a second-round pick.
Yeah.
So there's something here. I really liked watching P.J. Hall play. When those Battle of the Piney Wood games, which, by the way, I think they just announced that that's not going to be at NRG Stadium this year.
Is it even happening? Isn't FCS canceling everything right now?
I don't know. Yeah, I guess why would I read? I read an article this morning that said they weren't going to have it at NRG. That would be a really dumb article if it was like they're not going to have it at NRG because, by the way, they're also not playing
they're not
football.
Having it at all. Yeah,
yeah.
So PJ Hall now a Houston Texan. So.
I with all these position battles though, you bring in a guy and okay, great. I don't know how he's going to compete. Like, I don't know how any of these guys are going to compete other than against your own offensive linemen. This is where it gets really, really hard to figure out who you want on your roster out there on game day in week one because all you're only seeing them versus one opponent the entire preseason, which is the 12 or 13 guys that you just get stale going against.
I think it's worth pointing out. Then I don't know what PJ Hall, I'm assuming PJ Hall doesn't have any conventional practice squad eligibility. Like if this were a normal year, he wouldn't be eligible for the practice squad. But Seth, as you know, you can put six veterans onto what is a gigantic practice squad this year. The practice squad is 16 guys, and six of them can be guys who've played in the league at some point for extended periods of time. They can be veterans. So this could be one of those signings where, especially if you just failed a physical, this could be one of those signings where they're going to get him and they're going to stash him as one of those six veterans you put on there. And then when he recovers from whatever the injury is, you got a guy who has second-round talent. You coach him up. And it probably puts a couple guys on. You know, like if I'm Carlos Watkins, I'm a little more nervous about making the team today. You know, like guys who are in that layer of players who were probably in a little bit of jeopardy anyways, that probably puts them on notice a little bit.
Well, this is actually one of the things I like about this signing, and I think maybe it's a little bit of a sign of a shift in philosophy where under Romeo Crennel, I didn't understand why they kept stockpiling all these defensive linemen that I liked, like because they're old school run stuffers like Angelo Blackson and Brandon Dunn and Carlos Watkins, guys like that, Albert Huggins.
Yeah.
But I didn't understand why they wanted so many of them. So I like that when they drafted Ross Blacklock, he's in a different mold. He's a little bit lighter than those guys, but more explosive. You know, PJ Hall, more explosive than those guys. And what that defense really, really needs is speed everywhere. You know, they've got speed at Zach Cunningham, a couple of, now they have speed in the defensive backfield because they have physical talent there. They just got to show it on the field. This is a little bit more speed up through the meat of your defense up front.
Yeah, so if you're just missing it, and if you are a Bearcat, just know PJ Hall, now a member of your Houston Texans. I was laughing when I saw at PJJ Watt is his Twitter handle.
The Southland Conference is still deciding whether to play or not.
Okay,
so
good.
If they do decide to play, they won't be playing the Battle of the Piney Woods at NRG.
Makes sense. Bill O'Brien was on the NFL Network yesterday, and he had this to say about Will Fuller.
He's worked hard, Rhett. I mean, he's really worked hard this offseason. He came back in good shape. You know, he did what was necessary during this kind of unprecedented time relative to workouts and where he could work out. He had a good trainer he worked with, and he's come back and he's ready to go. And so, look, you know, relative to the season and all those things, I think we got to take it one day at a time. But he's a very smart player. When he's played for us, I've said a lot in the past, he's been very productive. And so the key is to keep him healthy, to have him out on the field, because when he's out there, he makes a lot of plays for our football team. He's a great guy. We love having him on the team, and we're doing everything we can to make sure he's there for 16 games.
Yeah, so that's Bill O'Brien. Bill O'Brien, by the way, going to be on 8 o'clock tomorrow with Mark Vandermeer and John Harris on Texans Training Camp Live here on Sports Radio 610. So nice things to say about Will Fuller. It's not stuff we haven't heard O'Brien say before about Will Fuller, Seth, but we've heard O'Brien and Fuller both now actually say the word 16 games multiple times about Will Fuller. And he's been a big topic this week because he met with the media and was talking about the rebuilding of his posture, which has been going on.
Yeah, it was cool. Like he's been working with a personal trainer and getting his body right. Yeah. Whatever. But I don't look. That stuff's all valid and
wow.
It's good stuff. It's just no. Because somebody asked me a couple days ago. He said, like, why should I believe that Will Fuller is going to get better? Like,
fair
what
question.
Has he done differently in the offseason? And the only thing I could say is. I think you just can never tell with these things. You could do everything right. He could have 10 strength and conditioning gurus that are all the best in the field, and they might do everything right, and you still get injured. There's just no way to predict that a guy who's been injury prone is going to turn it around. Sometimes guys do. Fred Taylor famously kind of turned his injury prone status around. Yeah, look, you know, Frank Gore tore two ACLs early in his career. You would have figured he's done for. He'll never play 20 years like he's on pace to do.
He's going to outlive us all.
Yeah. But I can't predict it. So it's great that they're talking about 16 games. I do say this. Sometimes when you set goals for yourself, let's see. It's hard. I don't like to fixate on the number 16. Because if that becomes the only thing you're focused on, well, then all of a sudden, if you get injured in week five, well, okay, I haven't reached
my goals this year.
We had a coach in college once that had our goals for the season was on this step. It was like these steps that you had to climb.
Oh, okay.
But it was impossible. Like if you lost in week four, you couldn't take the next step.
Right.
It was so he had to like he just had to take the whole motivational everything he had hinged around his motivational tactic was centered on going undefeated that season.
Boy, that's really interesting. Yeah, I didn't think about that. If you know, all of a sudden when your goals are out the window in week three, you're like, well, no real reason to come to the building anymore, I suppose.
I mean, that's kind of being extreme. I think it's I was injury prone early in my career, and then I did a bunch of stuff and I fixed. That's why the posture stuff wasn't as a big a surprise to me as it was to you, because I'd heard it a lot when I was trying to figure out what the hell was wrong with me. I saw a couple different people that focused on this. There's a guy at Goscue out in San Diego that works with stuff like that, and a whole other bunch of gurus, and it helped for me. It made a big difference. So I hope for Will Fuller it makes a big
difference. Are you like me, Seth, where I just assume that there's some procedure over in Europe for any of this stuff that's banned here but legal over there, like Will Fuller. Like, I was hoping that there'd be people sort of following Will Fuller's travel account, like his Expedia account or whatever. Like, you know how I know that Fuller's going to have a big season? He spent 3 weeks in Amsterdam. You know, like that there's some sort of, you know, either you know, stem cell treatment he can get on his hamstrings and groin, or that there's some illegal procedure here in the United States that doctors in Europe are happy to go do, and then Will Fuller just happened to plan a European vacation this offseason.
I guess most of that stuff is for more just acute injuries.
Okay.
Like, oh, I've got a knee that has this condition.
Gotcha.
It's hard that, oh, your entire body keeps getting injured. Okay, yeah, we've got something for that. There's no magic pill for that just yet.
And that's where Will Fuller falls into that category. What jumped out at me yesterday, Seth, and some of the stuff I was reading just in getting ready for the show and how important a season this is for Will Fuller. We all know locally here how important Will Fuller is to the Texans. We know how much more productive they are when Will Fuller is on the field. And I think Texan fans are wondering, okay, if he is able to play maybe not even 16, let's just say 14 games, right? Just a more – I think the most he's played in a season up to this point is 11. If he's able to play 14 games, let's say, and he puts up 12 or 1,300 yards, if he has a big year, if he has a year that a first-round pick should have and that I think a lot of people think Will Fuller could have, then the topic becomes – what do you do in the offseason with this guy? Do you pay him a big deal when he still has really been injury prone other than what would have been 2020? Or do you franchise tag him? What do you do? What was an indicator for me as to how big a year this is for Will Fuller, because we wonder about that here locally. Boy, do you pay him? Do you not pay him? What's the impression of Will Fuller around the league as far as what type of free agent he's going to be next year? There was a list yesterday on NFL.com of the top 25 free agents for 2021.
Yeah.
You know, Dak Prescott's on there. George Kittle is on there, although Kittle sounds like might be near a big deal here as of this morning.
Kittle called that fake news, but then Ian Rappaport and a couple other, Michael Silver came out saying, oh, no, there's a big contract coming.
Yeah, so anyways, there's a lot of names on there. Will Fuller was not one of the top 25. He wasn't one of the next 10 or 20 that were an honorable mention. Will Fuller is nowhere to be seen on a list. And granted, this is just one list. You know, someone could put a list together, and he's the 18th. Most valued free agent. It's one person's opinion. The point is, though, he's not a guy who's even close to being on the radar of being one of the highest paid receivers in football. Yet I think he has the potential to put up numbers alongside some of the best receivers in football. This is a huge, huge year for Will Fuller. He said the other day, though, he's not worried about his contract.
I'm not going to worry about the contract. The contract is going to come depending on how you play. So my focus has been to just, you know, be the best version of myself, and I feel like I did that this offseason.
I want to say it was Jason from OverTheCap.com. He founded OverTheCap.com. He just specializes in following the NFL salary cap and contracts like that. It was either him or Texans Cap, at Texans Cap on Twitter. I think he projected Fuller to, if he stays healthy, if he plays all 16 games, then for him, he'll get a $15 million a year contract. Mm-hmm. The COVID cap restrictions won't hurt him as much. But if he only plays 10 or 11 games, or maybe even 12 games, but he has some kind of injury that keeps it fresh in teams' minds that, man, this guy gets injured every single year, he could drop drastically.
Yes.
There's almost no in-between with him. It's either, hey, demonstrate that you can play an entire season, or you're just another guy out there because we can't depend on you.
That's
particularly
right.
In the playoffs. That's been one of the. It's one thing if you play 12 games, but then in the playoffs you're healthy and you produce. But if people feel like, man, even if we get 12 games out of you, we're going to be coaxing you along through the playoffs like they did last year, that's just you can't pay that guy money.
No, it's a huge thing to have to manage through the months of November and December with Will Fuller. He knows that. He knows that as well as anybody. Certainly Bill O'Brien knows it. Deshaun Watson said last week that his expectations of Fuller are top receiver in the league type expectations.
Well, Will's going to ball out. I mean, Will's going to be one of the best receivers in the league. So, you know, he's came back a lot stronger, a lot faster. I mean, he was real, real, really good, very confident in himself and what he did over the offseason. I'm very confident in what he can do. And we all are as an organization, as a team. So there's no doubt that Will can, you know, take that role and do, you know, great things with it.
So, Seth, look, when Deshaun Watson says Will Fuller can be one of the best wide receivers in the league, that's obviously very, very high praise. He was a first-round pick. He's been super productive when he's been on the field, but hasn't been able to stay on the field. But there are certain stats that you could cherry-pick a little bit. Like, I saw this one online, and I apologize. The tweet itself is not opening up this is from Aaron Reese of The Athletic, posted this yesterday. And it was actually an article about Will Fuller and his contractual situation. These are the receivers who, over the last two seasons, with a minimum of 40 targets per year, have averaged at least 2 yards per route run. Okay, so just, and I know that's a bit of a nebulous stat for a lot of people, but obviously the more yards per route run, the more explosive and productive you are. And I think the point here is these are the names that Will Fuller is alongside. These are the top receivers the last two seasons that have averaged at least 2 yards per route run. Michael Thomas, best receiver in football. Tyreek Hill, most explosive weapon in football. Julio Jones, best receiver of the last decade. Devontae Adams, Pro Bowl wide receiver. Mike Evans, Pro Bowl wide receiver. Keenan Allen, Pro Bowl wide receiver. The last one on the list, Will Fuller.
Yeah.
I mean, those are the names on a stat that's related to explosiveness that he's alongside right now. These guys all play full seasons. Will Fuller plays 9 games, you know?
Such a weird, as you read all, there's so many things that are so weird about Will Fuller's journey in the NFL so far, including, I talked about this with McClain a little bit yesterday, he was 10th in the NFL in catch rate, like catch percentage, so the percentage of time that he's targeted, is he catching the ball? He was top 10 in that stat, and yet he was one of the worst in terms of drop percentages too.
That's
like
weird.
He hasn't improved his hands that much. It's just that when they throw him the ball, he's wide open. Yeah. And when they throw him deep balls, he's wide open. And it, like, if anything, you know, Deshaun, and this might be one of those things that you start to see this year without DeAndre Hopkins there, is how many times has DeAndre Hopkins been targeted when perhaps other guys like Will Fuller were open and there were other opportunities out there? That's what you're hoping Deshaun takes that next step this year and starts to do that. But I was also thinking of just the weirdness of that, Sean, where like how much it matters in sport. There's no boxer where you say, like, wow, he'd be awesome if he just stopped getting knocked out so often.
Right, right.
He would be, look at how good he is through the first 3 rounds, and then he always gets knocked out.
Yeah.
You don't get to come back from that one.
You don't. if we were setting over-under numbers for Will Fuller for, I mean, Seth, do you even bother setting over-under numbers for catches, yards, and touchdowns? Because it's really just a function of what the over-under is for games played with Will Fuller, right? Like, yeah. Any Will Fuller over-under, to me, is not, it's to some degree maybe a bet on the scheme this year where it feels like they're going to spread the wealth a little bit with all these layers and layers of players at all these positions, especially with pass-catching running backs that they have. But with Fuller more than anything else, like I'm looking at, I go yards. I go, let's set the over-under at 951 yards. You go, okay, well, if he's healthy, he'll blow past that. If he's like normal Will Fuller has been the last 4 years, he doesn't come close to it.
Question from a texter.
Yeah.
Do you guys think that the current Astros pitching staff is equal to the Texans wide receiver group? I'll say immediately that the Astros pitching staff is better, if only, without even thinking about it too deeply, that the guys at the top of the Astros pitching staff, right this moment, McCullers and Greinke are both all-stars, yeah. And there aren't any... There's no Pro Bowlers. There's no current Pro Bowlers right. on the Texans receiving corps.
Right.
Yeah.
Is Will Fuller Justin Verlander? My column. Next.
Let's go full 6'10 on this, Sean.
Right.
Should Justin Verlander be looking up the Will Fuller?
That's right.
Will Justin Verlander ask Will Fuller for advice?
Should
this
Justin
year?
Yeah. Verlander be focused on his posture? Next.
What can.
I was a little surprised along those lines. I'm glad that texter brought that up. Cynthia Freeland, whose work I enjoy, she does a lot of sort of analytics work on NFL.com.
Yeah.
She did a short video yesterday that listed the wide receiving corps in the NFL, just from 32 all the way up to 1. You know, just the best ones. You know, she didn't have any, they're not, you know, not the best in terms of catch rate or yards per route run, just her opinion starting at 32 and just a rapid fire video. And I'm going, okay, well, let's see where the Texans are. You didn't have to wait long. She has the Texans as the 28th best receiving corps in the NFL right now.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Hmm.
That's...
Well, if you look at them, I mean, there's 1,000-yard season amongst the entire staff in the last 5 years.
Yeah, no, but I get it. But I started looking at who some of the next teams were on the list, and I'm going, okay, I think they're... The Patriots were 27th. I mean, their receiving corps is better than the Patriots' receiving corps. The Raiders were next. Yeah, I know the Raiders drafted Henry Ruggs, but the Texans' receiving corps to me is better than the next four or five teams. I'm going, okay, well, they're better than them. They're better than them, you know?
I forgot Brandon Cooks obviously changes those stats. I was just going off my pre Brandon Cooks stats. Brandon Cooks has only gone 1 year without having a 1,000-yard season since his rookie year.
Right.
He's been very consistent.
Right.
That's a boy. Brandon Cooks. I'm going to become a huge Brandon Cooks fan if
he stays unconcussed.
This works out. Yeah.
Yeah.
Even if he stays concussed. Hey, I don't think it was the concussions that were slowing him down last year. It was
scheme.
It was scheme and Jared Goff.
Yeah, yeah. So I just
and frankly, 20... and Sean McVay, whose little parlor tricks don't impress anybody quite as much anymore.
No, did you hear them?
Oh, you can remember what plays were played in a game. Oh, my gosh, you must be the best coach who ever lived.
Yeah, yeah.
How about you score a couple of touchdowns in the Super Bowl next time you're there?
I didn't see that. I think Landry may have told me this yesterday. Landry and I watched the Rocket game together yesterday. That Monday Night Football took a run at Sean McVay. Was that?
Oh, really?
Is that? Yeah.
Like tampering almost.
I said, are you sure they didn't mean Sean Payton? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like that would feel like more of a coach you go after who's won a Super Bowl, who's a little more seasoned.
Who Although said McVay's this? Landry got said this.
Yeah, he said he had seen it on Twitter. So I'll find it during the break. I was curious if you had seen the same thing.
I hadn't seen it.
Yeah, I hadn't seen it either.
ESPN talked to Sean McVay about a Monday Night Football gig.
Hey,
hands off ESPN, even though I was just poking at McVay a little bit.
Yeah.
He is one of the bright young coaching stars in the league.
Yeah.
Stop trying to poach our talent. I'm still a little peeved that CBS went so hard after Tony Romo when Tony Romo was a viable option for the Texans.
I know.
At one point. I'm glad. Look, it worked out for the best, but it's still the actual concept still annoys me.
Yeah.
That they went after a current NFL player and coaxed him into retirement when maybe another team in the league that you cover might have still wanted that guy to play. Go screw yourselves.
I Payne and Pendergast with you on a Thursday text message. Jason Cooks a Pro Bowler? No, he's never made a Pro Bowl, believe it or not. This might be the first year. But Brandon Cooks, he's been traded a bunch of times, never made a Pro Bowl. little Brandon Cooks factoid for you there. Bill O'Brien, J.J. Watt, both going to be on the station within the next day or so. Bill O'Brien, 8 o'clock tomorrow with Mark Vandermeer and John Harris on Texans Training Camp Live, and then J.J. Watt going to be on with the afternoon guys tomorrow. So we got you covered big time, and I'll be out at practice calling in with updates to In the Loop and Clint Sterner in the show tomorrow and throughout training camp as well. We've got you covered. Training camp going on right now. Download that radio.com app to bring it with you wherever you go. The NFL made a great decision yesterday as a league that is going to go a long way to ensuring that we get football in 2020. We will tell you what it is next.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.